On the other hand, Markland continued, it really didn't take the threat of potential imperial displeasure to get you in to see me. He shrugged. I never have time to keep completely abreast of your memos, Alfred, but I keep up well enough to know you and those Helen Island minions of yours are making all kinds of waves again, thank God.
We try, Seamount acknowledged. Although I have to admit the tempo seems to slow down just a bit with Captain Athrawis out of the kingdom.
The look he gave Markland was more than a little speculative, but the civilian had become accustomed to the pudgy Commodore's occasional probes where Merlin was concerned. He does seem to have that fertilizing effect, doesn't he? He said in reply.
I hadn't realized you had such a command of understatement, Seamount observed with a thin smile.
We academics inevitably become masters of the language, Markland said with a matching smile, then tipped back in his swivel chair. So, what's managed to pry you loose from King's Harbor?
Actually, the main thing I want to do, as I believe I mentioned in my note, is to spend a little time with Dr. Lewis. I've got a couple of questions I need her to answer for me, if she can. But I also wanted to get you broadly informed about where we are at the moment.
Markland nodded. Given the fact that the Royal College's pursuit of knowledge had always skirted a little too close to the edge of the prescriptions of Zhuo Zheng for some of the clergy's comfort, it had seemed like a good idea to keep it well separated from the crown when old King Caleb I originally endowed it. By the time Markland became the college's head, that separation had become a firm tradition, and despite his own involvement in the original innovations Merlin Athrawis had midwifed, he'd seen no reason to change it. Until, that was, arsonists had destroyed the original college and very nearly murdered Mocklin himself in the process. At which point, Emperor Caleb, only he'd still been King Caleb at the time, had decided the time for such nonsense was past. He'd moved the college onto the grounds of Tellisburg Palace, assigned responsibility for its security to the Royal Guard, and brought one Rajir Mocklin fully inside his own inner circle. One of the outward signs of that change was the fact that Mocklin had also been formally named to head the Imperial Council of Inquiry when Empress Charlian created it. So, inform me, he invited now, clasping his hands behind his head and leaning still farther back in his chair.
Well, Seamount began. First, I finally got my experimental board, you know, the one I've been kicking around as a concept for so long, set up. Took me a while, I admit, but a lot of that was because of how long it took to find the right man to head it. I finally have, though, I think. I can't remember. Have you ever actually met Commander Mondrain?
Mondrain? Mocklin repeated slowly, frowning thoughtfully. Then his eyes narrowed. Tall, skinny, young fellow with black hair? Always looks like his trousers are about to catch on fire?
I don't know that I'd describe him exactly like that. Seamount's lips quivered, although he managed not to laugh out loud. Still, he is a bit fidgety, so I'd say you've got the right man.
Mocklin nodded, although a bit fidgety fell well short of the young man he remembered. His own impression of Mondrain had been of a man possessed of an abundance, one might almost have called it a superabundance, of nervous energy. Physically, the commander could have been deliberately designed as Seamount's antithesis, but Mocklin could see far greater and more important similarities under the skin.
At any rate, the Commodore continued, I've assigned Irvin, that's his first name, to ride herd on my other clever young officers. In fact, I told him I wanted him to start out by examining everything we think we already know.
What we think we already know? Mocklin raised one eyebrow, and it was Seamount's turn to nod.
Exactly. The thing is, Rajir, we've changed so much so quickly over the last few years that I'm not comfortable in my mind about how systematically we've approached the situation.
Oh, he waved his left hand, the one missing its first two fingers, courtesy of a long-ago gunpowder accident.
I'm satisfied that we're enormously far out in front of anyone else, but we've moved so fast, covered so much ground, that I'm almost certain at least some of the things we've done are less than optimal. So I asked Irvin to start with a clean set of assumptions, to look at what we've done and see if he can spot any profitable avenues we passed up on our way by. Or, for that matter, choices we made which, with the benefit of hindsight, may not have been the best ones. Places where we might have chosen differently if we'd had more time to think about it.
I see. Macklin swung his chair gently from side to side while he considered what Seamount had just said. And, as he considered, he realized just how much sense the Commodore was making. In fact, I should have suggested something like this months ago, he admitted. I wonder why it never even occurred to me, he snorted mentally. No, you don't, he told himself. You know exactly why it didn't. It's because you know the truth about Merlin. You know about all the computer records Owl has tucked away, so you know Merlin has all the answers at his fingertips, which is why you've been assuming he must have given you the right answers to our various problems. But what Merlin's been after from the beginning almost certainly means he hasn't always gone out of his way to just hand us the best answer to a problem now, doesn't it? He wants us to have to work for it, and to recognize the potentials to find better solutions on our own, without his leading us to them by the hand. Macklin gave a mental headshake. He's right. We do have to develop and cultivate that kind of thinking of our own. But I wonder how hard it must be to not just tell us how to do something, especially something which could turn out to be critical in the end, whatever it seems like at the moment.